Welcome, security enthusiasts, to another exciting episode of our Who's Next webinar series. In today's edition, we are going to deep dive into the realms of Secure Enough. Get ready for an engaging conversation about the importance of fortifying your organization's defense mechanisms and why you really shouldn't ever settle for Secure Enough. I am delighted to be your host today, but before we start, I have a few housekeeping notes for you. We are, as always, recording today's session, and we will be making it available to watch on demand afterwards. We will also take questions at the end, so please add your questions during the session to the Q&A section, and we will try to address all these questions today. If we run out of time, we will make sure that your questions are get answered afterwards, and we will share the answers with you as well. So let me introduce myself. I'm Peter Budai, and I'm proudly being part of Trezorit family for over 11 years now. Currently, as a Chief Technology Officer, I'm leading the product and data engineering teams, and what is more relevant here, that I'm also responsible for product security and IT security departments as well. And therefore, I'm very excited to have with me today Henk-Jan Angerman, who is a seasoned security engineer and expert in related fields of cybersecurity. He founded his first company in 2001, and currently he is the chief visionary officer of SecWatch, which is a Dutch company focusing on information security services. Welcome, Henk-Jan.
Thank you, Peter.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Please tell a few words about yourself. Like, what led you to the cybersecurity field in the first place?
What led me to the field in the first place? Well, I was always interested in security. And back in the day, in 2001, I was actually being trained for an avionics in the aerospace industry. But in 2001, doing your exams, it wasn't a very good period back then. So I moved to computers and engineering, which I, you know, kind of from a hobby perspective, always had a fond feeling for. And yeah, security as well. Back in the day, we had some gamings going around with some viruses, and you know, kind of struck me when people's computers are infected, and I wanted to research that. So slowly I moved into the field of antivirus, firewalls, consultancy, stuff like that. And I kind of hang out still.
I see. So it's very interesting. And what are your main focus areas at SecWatch? What kind of topics or services do you typically help your customers with?
Yeah, typically we do security assessments, penetration testing, red teaming, and the consultancy service. That's due to all kinds of advice there. Yeah.
Okay, I see. So with that, we can jump right into the into our topic today, and for that I will just stop the sharing so our audience can enjoy our the both of us in full screen. So let's start with it goes without saying that how important IT security is for individuals, and but especially for companies. It's really important because as technology continues to evolve and in an unprecedented space, so do the tactics and the capabilities of cyber adversaries. And yeah, we can see ransomware attacks like creeping entire networks and data breaches that are compromising sensitive information. So the consequences of not proper enough security measures can be catastrophic, both financially and reputationally. But still, many companies underestimate the risks that they are facing, or they are not investing enough in security. So they are settling for products, settling for settings, procedures that they consider secure enough. So today we are going to discuss into why is this practice so common, why is it dangerous, how can you avoid falling this trap. So first of all, what are your opinions? What do you think? What are the main reasons that you think or you experienced behind that so many companies are not having like adequate enough security measures?
Yeah, what I see in the field is that currently there are a lot of initiatives and new products and new vendors going around. And a lot of our clients simply don't oversee how many solutions there are out there. Also in our industry, there's a lot of FUD going around. So basically, you know, you have a lot of tooling that doesn't do much or doesn't really fit the company at that point. And a lot of companies are still very technically minded. You know, they first try to reach out for a solution, tech solution, without properly analyzing whether such solution should fit at all. So we help those customers, of course, and try to sort out which kind of products are present for their company, which products could have a fit for their company. By an RFP, for example, setting up an RFP for them, not too big, just a small one. And we see that really helps. The industry is too many vendors, too many products right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is interesting you brought up RFPs because one interesting thing that I noticed in our practice as well, we also receiving many RFPs, is that these RFPs are sometimes just copied over existing templates copies of the ones that are found on the internet and not really tailored for the needs of the company.
Yeah, that's true. You need to really look at your company, at your type of business, the country you're in. Is there any, you know, legal stuff you need to take in consideration, etc. So, for example, you know, if we see that a customer of us is looking for a US product which doesn't have a GDPR compliant setup or a hosting environment in a European tenant of AWS, for example, we typically put them off the list. So we help those customers to with just taking the right selection there and stripe out all the vendors that does, in our case, do not require, apply to the GDPR, mm-hmm. for example. We always have a few questions that I try to ask the vendor. So if a security mm-hmm. vendor comes in, we typically say, okay, that's cool, but what in cybersecurity do you not offer? So what do you don't offer? How would you handle a security breach yourself as a company, especially, you know, with all the latest things going around with Microsoft, stuff like vendor lock-in, is Microsoft on its own still secure, for example? Those debates are going on right now. And of course, you know, ask the vendor what kind of security measures do you have in place yourself. So kind of turning it around, you know, mm-hmm. and making sure that you get the right answers there to move on with such a vendor. And if they can't answer it or they don't have anything, you should, you know, think twice, basically.
Mm-hmm. And what other tips would you have for companies who are looking for vendors? Because yeah, that's for true. You also mentioned that there are so many tools on the market, and they are offering, like, they are claiming that they offer all around solution. Like in one tool, you get security, you get answers for all your security needs, and what else could companies look for?
Yeah, well, typically there is no silver bullet. There is no 100% guarantee. It doesn't exist. So any company from a marketing perspective that claims that stuff, you know, exit, buy. Same, you know, I mentioned it before, like make a good request for a proposal for those bidders, and select, you know, maybe two or three in the space. Really, you know, dive into what kind of solution you would need. But first ask yourself the question, what do we need as a company? Would it fit the company? Would it fit your team, both in time, terms of knowledge? Can your team handle it? Do they understand what the product does or the solution? If it doesn't, you know, you sometimes can, of course, ask the vendor to manage it for them. But you need to be sure that you have some idea, because in the end, you know, as a CFO or CEO, you're still responsible, right? And I see a lot of implementations and tools being, you know, just set up and then kind of forgotten. Which is fine in the back in the day when I started with antivirus. It's just, you know, install antivirus and then you get some updates and that's about it. Those days are over, right? So you need to maintain your product, make sure that the product is still up to date, make sure your product still fits the company as it grows, or maybe change the strategy or whatever. Review that, you know, once a year, maybe once in 3 years, and ask yourself the question, does it still fit? Maybe we need to change, maybe we need to grow in there. So yeah, those are basically, I think, the most important things we mm-hmm. advise clients as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really interesting point that you raised, that companies and we are also falling into this trap, is that we are spending a lot of effort, putting a lot of effort in selecting a new vendor, selecting a new tool. But when it comes to maintaining the existing one or keeping up what new capabilities the existing tool has gained, and whether we need to reconfigure it, whether we need to get to know to the new feature, maybe you don't have to look for another one, just let's keep on using the existing ones. I see that it's over overlooked, that new is always better, but it's not always the case, because all tools are improving.
No, we do a lot of secondary checkups and audits on tooling that's been installed to make sure it's been installed properly, that's functioning properly. We see a lot of misconfigurations as well. So we had some examples of tools being installed in the endpoint security space, where, for example, somebody, you know, kind of made a boo-boo and said, you know, we have the low, medium events on trap and alert and, you know, block, but they forgot to set the high and critical alerts to actually trap and block. So medium kind of, you know, kind of simple lateral movement or whatever was being blocked, but a full-blown Mimikatz memory dump.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing, you know, and that's important.
Was it due to a misconfiguration?
Typically misconfigurations happen a lot. We still see quite a lot of fire and forget installs. So you just roll out the basic install, for example, and that's about it, and then leave it to the customer to figure it all out. And that's both on on-prem solutions as on cloud solutions, for example. Sometimes it's also chosen to do from a cost perspective. So they choose the lowest license, for example, which doesn't really fit the need of the company right then. We see a lot of firewall stuff being underscaled. So as soon as the company sets security features on, performance will drop so badly that they practically don't have internet anymore. All those kind of scaling issues, security issues, installation issues, configuration issues happen a lot. And that's why we sometimes come in to, you know, just double check on that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. Okay. So, yeah. So, what we can, you know, rephrase here is that, yeah, you don't have to just buy, but you have to config it properly, obviously. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that... you mentioned you're helping these helping customers, and I'm pretty sure that you met some interesting events. You already mentioned some in the wild, where what you found when you did, for example, pen testing, or when you did an assessment of a company's security environment.
True.
Can you give us some example to maybe as a good or a bad advice, an example what can go wrong, actually.
Yeah, I'll try to be nice. A lot of things we see is your typical basic hygiene and security not properly done or not done at all. So when we come in, we see, you know, there's no centralized visibility, there's no centralized SIEM or logging going on. So if you have an incident response, the first question, of course, is, you know, can I see the logging, for example? And then typically there is none, or the logging is already encrypted by the attacker. There's not even a basic understanding of threat intelligence, for example. So they don't even keep up if they have like a Cisco router or firewall that needs an update to patch a critical vulnerability, for example. They just rely on the IT admin to do that. And typically they don't have a real contract there. So the IT admin, you know, he's not really maintaining it. We see that a lot of user actions, storage privilege actions, stuff like that isn't logged at all. So typically they don't have any idea what's going on in their environment. We see that in a recent case we saw that there was a big single storage file server which had still files back from the late 90s. So there was no archiving, it was all single stamp storage. They did make backups, but they were not immutable, stuff like that. So they got attacked, and the entire environment, the backups, everything was encrypted. And then again, no complete visibility. So they had an endpoint solution that could, see these attacks. But the attackers saw that. So basically they moved into the Linux and VMware environments and stuff like that. And, encrypted entire VMs instead of unchecking, the single machines that were defended. Stuff like that. Bad and default cloud configs, especially in small businesses right now. Office 65, no MFA, or MFA is implemented, but they're forgetting the Azure sites for Entra ID, for example, to push it through there as well.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, we are entering the realm of cloud, and then I wanted to bring this up as well. Is that I'm sure that with the emergence of cloud-based and software as cloud-based solutions and software as a service solutions, Office 65. Many companies are like moving that way because they feel that it's not my burden anymore. It's the service provider who needs to do the config and needs to do it properly. And I'm pretty sure that they are set up correctly. And this is, I think, a prime example of our whole topic is the secure enough that the common belief is that the cloud providers are doing their job and they are configured properly, but it's not always the case.
No, we see a lot of companies saying, we moved to Office 65 with the email and the files and stuff like that, and then Microsoft will take care of the rest and the backups and stuff, but typically they don't. You have to do that yourself, or your service provider does do that. That's a real misser, because also we have a lot of service providers that are either overworked, overstressed, too busy, and the main thing that's going on, it has to work. Printers need to work, email needs to work, stuff like that. So we see a lot of basic setups there, and a lot of, again, configuration errors, or sometimes even configuration is not done at all. And this is really a problem, because you're trying to move to the cloud to be a little bit more secure and in control. And we say, of course, a Microsoft environment or whatever can do more, because they're a bigger company. They have more focus on security, for example, quote lately. But, and it's not really true. It's still your data. It's your tenant. It's your environment. So you're responsible for everything. You need to put it on. You need to buy maybe an extra license. Or you need some people that understand the environment and know how to properly maintain it for you. And this is not typically done. So that's a shame, but it's the truth.
Yeah. Well, yeah, while it is a cloud, you still need to configure it. It's not coming out of the box. It's, in this case, it's very similar to the on-premise tools and on-premise solutions. You don't just buy it and out of the box, but you need to configure and...
Yeah, just people just roll them out, and we see a lot of users just going about with logo admin rights, which makes it very easy for attackers to move on and do stuff. I don't have to mention the open buckets, open files on OneDrive for everybody on the internet, stuff like that, misconfigurations basically.
Yeah, that's we know of like many of these.
Yeah, Microsoft had just one, right?
Yeah, I can name at least like two or three occasions of security breaches happening because like open buckets or open files in the cloud. So it often leads back to the misconfiguration. And it's really difficult to distinguish between the misconfiguration done by the IT security team or user error. But what is your experience? I mean, how much companies spend on IT and like setting up properly IT versus training their own employee, and what would be the ideal?
You mean in percentages what we see?
How many? Yeah. So, or what would be? What do you think? Like, are they equally important, or which one should we invest more?
Which one should we invest more? I would say typically for SME is investing in your basic hygiene. It's not too expensive. It's easily done. And it kind of sets the standard for your entire environment. You can always later add on to, you know, more focus products, for example, or endpoint security or whatever you need. But don't overdo it. You know, there's no reason to make it so secure that your people can't work anymore, or you're spending more money than it's basically worth. It's a Fortnox problem, basically. So my money would be on the proper configuration, baseline configuration, stuff like that to start with.
And you mentioned, like, yeah, spend that much that it's worth for protecting. How can one assess the risk or the amount of money that would be, like, best to spend?
Yeah, typically we say that about 30% of the costs of an incident will be your budget for security, for example, which involves everything. So let's say an example, you get hit, you're down for typically 2 weeks, and you need another week to, you know, because you were 2 weeks down, to address all the backlog. So a typical company is down for like 3 weeks, losing about, you know, 50 to 100,000 euros in SME. So basically for 20, 30,000 in that case, you know, you would have quite a secure and proper setup. And those costs are, of course, annually. I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, that's a good rule of thumb. I think it's that you can assess, and we shouldn't, you know, you shouldn't forget about, it's not just the revenue that you lost, but the reputation, the loss of customer trust.
For there are some metrics you can't really measure. Yeah, and really depends on the type of business as well. You know, if you're in the industry of making stuff and you have proper segmentation, most companies could still run during an attack if it's their production environment isn't being hit, for example. And typically when we do those incidents, we focus on getting the revenue back online as soon as possible. With the, you know, the stuff we can do, focus later on all the other stuff that needs to be done, and especially goes for backups. Sometimes we just, you know, rebuild because it's faster.
They mentioned industries or manufacturing, and it make me curious. Are there any patterns that you see that each kind of industries invest more in security or taking it more secure, more seriously than others?
No, and there is a big difference between IT and OT. They're both different specialists. It requires different kind of people, and also from a security point of view. But, you know, I think that it's overall basically going down at the board. So C-level needs to be aware, and they have to have a sense of urgency, basically. Sometimes they're driven through compliance. They have to, they need to, or their clients are asking, you know, do you have any security stuff in place? Can you show us? But typically what we see is a sense of urgency. So, you know, we're not that interesting for attackers. I have nothing to hide, stuff like that. Well, as a red teaming, I would say, oh, I'll be the judge of that. You know, I will, as an attacker, be the judge on whether you're valuable for me, or yes or no. And it doesn't really matter whether you're a small or big company or just solo. It doesn't really matter. If there's money, or I could leverage you as a stepping stone to attack somebody else, I'm after. That will be my way to go. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very, very important fact as well. This is another reason why you shouldn't settle for secure enough. To circle back to our topic, is that, yeah, you might think that you don't worth, or you don't have information that's worth enough for an attacker. But as a company, you're dealing with, there's no really no company is really exempt from that. That no. They are dealing with sensitive information, at least their employees' personal records. And as you mentioned, it's not just their own data, but they can be used as a stepping stone or an entry point for another attack. So you shouldn't think that you are not in danger.
No, exactly. And you know, in terms of data, we typically see no proper data hygiene at all, which means that there is typically a lot of sensitive information going on dumps, for example, on the internet, which can also unhold private information. And sometimes it could be going back for years. But you still need to address all those people by GDPR law, for example, and make sure you inform all those people, which is a very daunting task to do. I've seen customers being hit and they took almost a year to get it all, you know, in place and on track again. A year. So, yeah, there you are.
Hello. Yeah. Okay. I have one final question that I'm interested in, because we are like approaching the end of our allocated time for today. What's your thought on whether you should look for specialized solutions for specialized needs or problems to like address, have a very typical tool that does one thing and that do it properly, or more on the I wouldn't say all around, but the solutions that require you to have less vendors applied and they're doing more in one?
Yeah, that's typically, it depends.
Okay.
but you know, for your typical, I think, you know, your SMB, SME, mainstream tooling, you know, would be the way to go to start with.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a very specialized environment, or your company does something very special, or you're very high on intellectual property, for example, you might want to have to look to more specialized products that fit that bill. Yeah.
So it's always comes back to that. You have to do your homework. You need to assess your own assets, digital assets. You need your processes and choose accordingly.
Exactly.
Okay, yeah. Thank you very much for your insights, and I'm pretty sure that we could continue for like hours like this.
I'm afraid, yeah.
Haven't touched yet, yeah, I think it would be best to jump now to the audience questions. We have a couple, and you got like very specific questions as well, can you recommend a router that supports ISP, LTE plus satellite, including firewalls that support all three networks? If you don't have something on top of your mind, then we can address this question later.
Yeah, there are some vendors that could do that. Can you make a router that supports routers? I'm more into the firewalls, ISP, LTE, and satellite. I made some projects with, for example, WatchGuard. I know Juniper has some solutions for that, but Juniper is, I think they were bought by HP right now. But there are modern firewalls basically that can do that, with failover stuff, with load balancing, anything.
Then there is another question that we touched tangentially, is that how much should one budget for basic security setup and the configuration for a hybrid setup? So you're talking about a small team, with a small team of 2 to 5 people.
That's very small. So that's not really my field of expertise, where we typically do larger environments. In money, it's going down to a user per user payment. And mm-hmm. I think you will have to kind of like 30 to 50 euros per user per month ish. I think then you have your endpoint security, you have some cloud security, you have some basic Microsoft security licenses there. Mm-hmm. And in a hybrid setup with such a team, there will probably be talking about, you know, laptops or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they're covered typically in those license seats.
Mm-hmm. And why we are here, what would be the ideal scaling of a team? So the question says like a team 2 to 5. How big company, like how many portions of a how big portion of a company should be like working on IT security? So
in such a small team?
I was referring to like if you have a 2 to 5 IT security team, like which is the size of the company that this team can
that's going all the ways. We have very big companies which have none. And we have very small companies, for example, that have 2 or 3. And again, it depends on your needed level of security. Mm-hmm. So the mainstream difference here might, for example, be a DevOps company doing development stuff would probably have a security team. So we basically get DevSecOps, for example, which is, you know, typically 1 or 2 guys working together with developers. And if you large enterprise and stuff, they have complete teams for each section, privacy, security, endpoint, you name them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a problem that also has... how do you call it? You know, that we don't have enough people going around in information security right now. So that, you know, most companies are trying to kind of offboard it and outsource that as a managed security service provider, for example, or whatever. Because, yeah, it's hard to get your own people and then keep them.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in small businesses. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. And and finally, one other quite concrete question is that would you recommend an external IT admin profile setup for your Microsoft tenant?
Not sure if I fully follow an external IT admin profile setup on the MS tenant. Well, if you have a party that's going to, you know, help you with it, they will have, of course, a login to your tenant to maintain it. But this is typically done through a kind of MSSP model. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's I need to deep dive and need some more information to get a good advice on that one.
Yeah. Okay. We received another couple of questions that we are, most of them are not, or some of them are not totally related to our topic. So we will make sure that that to answer those in writing, you will get answers to all of your questions. And we will even include the existing ones as well. But I'm afraid that we must stop around here right now. And we will share the answers later on. So all is left is for us to wrap up our session today, wrap up the topics here. So we talked about how many tools tools and options that IT security professionals need to choose from. And Henk-Jan shared us some insights, like some good practices, tips and guides, how you can choose the proper vendor, which questions or what signs you need to look for. Basically, there is no, the point here is that there's no silver bullet, all around solutions that not always the best, and the cheap solutions and are most probably not the best ones either. But selecting a proper tool is not everything. You need to configure the tool properly. Don't rely on the default settings. And also over the years, you need to continue doing self assessments regularly and maintaining the configuration of the product. We also talked about basic hygiene. How important is that? It's always comes up in talks like that, and everyone is aware of basic hygiene, but yet we can see that not everyone is doing basic hygiene properly. Update your software, passwords, two-factor authentication, and proper segmentation of infrastructure. These are all basic stuff, and you need to do them properly. And we touched the topic of like how much budget and how much you should allocate on the IT security. And Hankian shared us like a good rule of thumb is that you should calculate about one third for a cost compared to a cost of an incident when it comes to like an IT security budget. So yeah, thank you for joining us. I would like to, if you would like to learn more about these topics or other topics as well, I would like to ask you, or you can already register to our upcoming webinar. In this time, it won't be about IT security, but the new features and that we introduced in Trezorit. But you can also check our previous webinars as well. All of them are collected on our website. And while you are browsing your website, whether you have any other information that you are looking for, that you are welcome to check Trezorit's website, and also you are welcome to check SecWatch's website to learn about the services that they provide. And with that, I would like to thank you very much, Hankian, for being us here with us today. We learned a lot of intriguing information from you. And also would like to thank you for our audience for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.